Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Jenny Schneider, MD, MPH, founder and CEO of Homeward, a company focused on improving access to high-quality, affordable, comprehensive care in rural communities. Before founding Homeward, Jenny was most recently at Livongo until its acquisition by Teladoc, merger with Teladoc. So I welcome you to the program, Jenny, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David. Really delighted to be in conversation with you. Thanks for the chance to be here.
Sure. So I gave the sort of tiny snapshot introduction to Homeward. I wonder if you can expand on that and also talk about your journey to Homeward from where you've been before and sort of how this connects in your mind.
Sure. So my background, I grew up in Winona, Minnesota, which is the rural part of Minnesota. I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 12, and I did not see an endocrinologist until almost somewhere between 4 to 6 weeks, which felt normal at the time because I didn't know any different. And when I was at medical school at Hopkins, I recognized that that is not the standard of care, that those early days of people living with type 1 are fairly precarious. And I was fortunate not to be in and out of diabetic ketoacidosis until I made my way to an endocrinologist. My family is in Minnesota. Rural healthcare, rural America is a part of who I am, where I've grown up. And as you mentioned, I left at the time that we sold Livongo, and I joined General Catalyst as an executive in residence and spent time with the team there and with Hemant Taneja thinking through what are the big broken problems in healthcare and what can we uniquely bring from an experience standpoint to those problems. And clearly, healthcare in rural America is not working. So today, 20% of all Americans live in what's deemed a rural area. And the mortality for people based on a zip code in a rural market is 23% higher than for somebody based in an urban market. 23%, which is staggering. Mm-hmm. And when you look under the cover, a lot of the problem derives from access. There's fewer primary care doctors, and there's a real dearth of specialty care providers. And so thinking through the experiences that I've been a part of, both at Castlight Health and then Livongo Health, in partnership with my co-founder, Amar Kendall, you know, we have a strong basis in building products, digital and technology products that enhance services. And that's a lot of what needs to happen in rural America. It's not the only thing, however, because if you deliver healthcare through those services in a fee-for-service structure, the care is not sustainable. So it's a combination of taking on, moving toward a value-based care and taking on risk for total cost of care, and then being allowed to deploy those technology-enabled services to deliver care into those markets.
Sure. So, I mean, there have been, over the years, there have been many, some would say, failed experiments in terms of supporting delivery of care in rural America, whether it's federal financial supports of one sort or another, whether it's different care models, and many rural hospitals have closed over the past decades, and that certainly affects access in certain ways. And there are certain sort of infrastructure hurdles to be overcome. So I guess the question for you is, what are the key hurdles that you see that need to be overcome, whether it's reimbursement, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's acceptance of some other sort that you're seeing? What's the way forward on any one of these dimensions?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think you hit on probably all three of the biggest hurdles in rural America to deliver healthcare. One is reimbursement. The second one is infrastructure. And by that, I mean both broadband connectivity and roads. And then the third is acceptance. If you look at kind of reimbursement, the models today that exist are continue to throw more money in a fee-for-service world in an area where the patient volume is very dispersed. And, you know, if you think about it, like if you think about my family, for example, you live in a town where your primary care doctor is, I don't know, 2 to 3 hours away. The bulk of the town works as an hourly wage worker, and you're asked and expected to travel 2 to 3 hours for a 15-minute visit. And you've given up, you know, half or most of your paycheck for that day. And so it's not actually an irrational decision to not go. You know, if you put yourself in that scenario, you may not decide to go seek healthcare. So the reimbursement.
Right. It could take that long driving downtown in Boston.
That's fair. But you start to see it, you know, so there's a lot of people that are not being seen or taken care of until the crisis hits, until they have a, you know, heart attack or, you know, episode of COPD where they can no longer breathe and they seek emergency care. There hasn't been an alignment of incentives, of economic incentives to care for people over time and own both the outcomes of the care as well as the cost. So that's one in terms of reimbursement. The second is infrastructure. You know, it's a rural is, you know, not all rural is rural, and not all rural or kind of health deserts are because they're far away, but sometimes simply just the transportation. A lot of rural America does not have public transportation options or very limited public transportation. Again, if you're looking at the socioeconomic of the population in these markets, it's lower than in urban markets. So there's not as, it's not as easy. So the drive is longer, and it's not as easy to get to. The second is broadband connectivity. And this is, I think, a big reason why many people have not entered urban markets is because they're waiting for everybody to be able to be connected through broadband. What's happened in the last 5-ish years, and Livongo was one of these companies, there's a whole host of technology that's cellular enabled. And so it works without broadband connectivity. You still need cell towers. And granted, there are some spots without cell towers, but cellular connectivity is much more widespread than broadband.
More cellular than broadband.
That's
right. I wonder, do you see broadband last mile? Is that, you know, years away from your perspective, decades away, or, you know, is that something that can reach people sooner than that?
So I think broadband connectivity is moving. There's big federal grants happening right now under Biden. I don't think you have to wait for broadband connectivity. And this was one of our theses in entering rural market now. You can deliver technology-enabled services through cellular connectivity, period. You know, that's what we did at Livongo. That is how our system worked. And that's across the ecosystem. There's enough technology that's now enabled through cellular connectivity. So will broadband connectivity help? It sure will. Do you have to wait for it to be widespread? I don't think so. So I think the timing from a technology enablement is now. And the third barrier is really acceptance. And this is where, you know, you have to spend time. This is investing in the local markets. Healthcare is a great employment opportunity. And one of our corporate goals is to increase local employment in the markets where we deploy our services. It's to understand people and, frankly, to really personalize the care. It's an investment into the community and getting to know each individual. Because you choose to live in a rural area does not mean you're like every other person who chooses to live in a rural area. So it's really this deep personalization and understanding of each unique individual.
Where do you see the opportunity or the need to dig in or where to connect? What's your view of your place in the ecosystem? Is it a bridge between existing primary care physicians and patients, or is it something else?
So Homeward Health is entering rural markets as an in-network provider, and we're taking care of Medicare-eligible beneficiaries. We're partnering with the payers in that market to own the responsibility for clinical outcomes and total cost of care.
Okay. Then that requires a deep partnership with local providers, right?
Yes. Our goal is to not compete with local providers at all. If the issue to solve healthcare in rural America is more access, competition for access is probably not the right solution. We partner with primary care doctors who have existing panels and help provide both wraparound services and specialty care because we're entering as primary care and specialty care provider combined. And of course, we partner with the larger ecosystem within the local hospitals that do the more complex procedures that are not done by primary care doctors or specialists in an outpatient arena.
So do you see your organization as a technology-enabled provider organization or as a sort of a provider connector technology organization?
The first, we are a technology-enabled provider and we connect within the ecosystem, but we're not a connector. We're bringing a direct access to care and we're connecting with the other people who are also driving direct access to the care. So we're bringing care with us. We are coming in as a provider.
Great. If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Dr. Jenny Schneider, founder and CEO of Homeward. Jenny, is there a particular segment, a particular disease state, a particular use case you see as the leading edge for Homeward?
We really, again, we're really focused on serving the underserved individuals in Medicare who have not had adequate access or high quality care and providing that care to them. And we're doing that through a combination of technology enabled services to really augment the care that can be delivered so you can actually scale that, as well as changing some of the transportation components. You know, we're using mobile vans. We're parking our vans in retail centers in the flow of individual people's lives. So we're making care easier to get and more convenient for the individual people.
Okay. So you talked a little bit at the outset about your previous experiences, and I'd love to hear more about how those experiences are informing your work today.
Thanks so much for the question. I think, you know, when you think about what it takes to start something new and build a company, the unifying factor around mission, I think, is critical. I think you're able to attract intelligent, high-powered, hardworking individuals when you can align on what is the problem and how are we going to fix it? I think within our organization, there is an inordinate amount of passion to deliver healthcare in areas that are underserved. And that's why we're focusing on rural America. I think the second is how do you scale a business? You know, I've been fortunate in my last two jobs to go from startup to publicly traded, startup to publicly traded. And to actually get something that works is hard. To get something that works at scale is much harder. And I think having been through those experiences, myself and my team, we have a number of people who've had that experience. We're already setting the rails to take this business to a scale that actually allows not only the business to be successful, but allows us to really crack a code into, you know, making healthcare delivery services in rural America better. That's ultimately our goal, not only to build a successful company, but to actually help solve a real problem. And then I think third is just, you know, this idea around really, really deep personalization and treating quote unquote patients as people is critical. It's critical as an internal medicine doc, which I am, when I see people in the office to help motivate them. It's equally critical when you deliver services that are technology enabled at scale. And so there's a lot of work that we're doing around deep personalization to understand each individual all the way throughout the journey that we have them with us.
You mentioned something earlier about your own personal experience as a patient. And I'm wondering what from that experience do you bring to this work in rural health?
I think that all of us are patients, have been patients. And I think there's a deep vulnerability with being a patient. And I think many of us have had the good fortune, myself included, to have a group of doctors who treat you as a person first and a patient second. My endocrinologist, when I was able to see him at the Mayo Clinic, was a man named Roger Nelson. And from the get-go, I was not a patient, I was a person. And he deeply understood and listened to what I wanted and then let me be able to figure out how to control the condition around my own personal desires. That type of recognition to an individual, motivation around how to help care for their condition is something that has absolutely stuck with me. And I think is key and critical to success when you're caring for individual people, It's one thing to tell people what the, you know, guidelines say or the American Association of X, Y, or Z says. It's a whole nother thing to motivate people to take action to do that. And it is through deeply understanding what individual people care about. So, for example, you may say, you know, David, hey, it'd be great if you lost 5 pounds. You'd be like, okay, that's great. But what would be more motivating would be say, hey, David, you know that new dog you got? That dog would love to have a walk. 15 minutes after dinner would be amazing for you to do that. The motivation is kind of been tied to something that you care more about with something very concrete. So if we can offer recommendations that are embedded into people's deep personal lives, I think that has, that pays dividends. And for me, that was like, you know, again, I was diagnosed at age 12. I was told this is something I can do. It will never stop me. I can run marathons, climb Mount Kilimanjaro, go scuba diving, anything I wanted. And here's, it was given a tool set to be able to do that. That was an incredible experience for me. And that I think is critical to our ability to be successful on an individual level in these marketplaces.
So that's a great statement of sort of patient-centered care. This is, you know, an idea that's been around. And I guess I'm wondering, has this been missing on the rural health stage? Is this something that is new that you're bringing out there, or what exactly is the innovation here?
Our innovation in the rural market is probably threefold. One is to deliver personalized care at scale is really difficult. Mm-hmm. To do that in a rural market where the care delivery has typically been a service dominant model, it doesn't work. There's not enough service providers to take care of the population dispersed over a geography adequately. So what we're bringing is these ability to deliver those services through technology enablement across the entire spectrum. This is not a play just in telehealth. This is not a play just in remote patient monitoring. This is not a play just in mobile van visits to different places. It's across that whole spectrum. And the reason that we can do that across the whole spectrum is because we're owning the total cost of care. It's only in owning the total cost of care that we have the freedom to deploy these technology-enabled services that are not adequately reimbursed in a fee-for-service world to provide longitudinal, sustainable care. So the innovation is the combination of the value-based care and the technology-enabled services that drive personalization.
So could you give us an example of how does that play out for an individual patient?
Sure. So someone signs up for Homeward and we drive our mobile van to their house. In their house, we're able to ask a bunch of medical questions, listen to their heart and lungs, see which medications they're taking from their bottle. So the history is augmented. We're also able to discover, you know, do they have stairs that they can or cannot get up? Do they have a functioning heater? Are they close to other places where they can get healthy food? For example, if we diagnose that member with an episode of heart failure, we're able to put them on a monitoring that actually a scale that tells us when their weight fluctuates really deeply. So people with congestive heart failure, when they gain a lot of water weight, that starts an indicator that they're about to go into heart failure where they have water in the lungs or difficulty breathing. We can monitor this from afar. We put the scale in the house. Every time they step on the scale, they get a message back, but we're also watching. When we see that that weight goes up, we're able to reach out to that individual and give some recommendations. If we were not to do that, if that were not the scenario, that individual would probably wait about 3 more weeks, have, you know, real shortness of breath, need an ambulance, or be rushed to a hospital nearby to help figure out what was going on. So it's this combination of taking the care to the individual, monitoring the individual longitudinally over time for their chronic conditions, and then implementing the right amount of care when it works, when it's needed for them.
So the CHF example is a longstanding example that I hear from folks. And I guess the question is this something new to the rural health market? Or I imagine it certainly hasn't been as broadly available versus close to an AMC.
Yeah, almost all of these digital health innovations have not penetrated the rural markets for two reasons, mostly because they're dependent on broadband. That's been a switch recently. Mm. And the reason that like a CHF solution alone, if our company were only delivering a CHF solution, We would not be successful at bending the curve, quality and cost curve in individuals in rural markets. We're looking at a population of people greater than 65. Congestive heart failure is one diagnosis. It's one of about 20 that frequently sends people to the hospital. So if we're doing one out of 20, but not the rest of them, we're failing the ecosystem. So there's been slices of this that have been tried, but holistically in rural markets, because there's not a frequency of access to care, you really have to look across the ecosystem.
Jenny, I would like to hear from you how Homeward, how your community partners, how your patients have experienced the pandemic. What has the experience of working through the pandemic done in terms of services delivered throughout the pandemic? And also, what do you take away from that as we hopefully move out and into a new phase?
Good question. So I think writ large, you know, across the ecosystem, but certainly where access has been an issue, healthcare service volume has gone down throughout the pandemic. And you know and read the literature as well as I have, and that there's a prediction that because of the preventive nature of the missing preventive components of healthcare, there'll likely be an uptick in some of those diagnoses, such as screenings for cancers, worsening.
Sure, all the things that we didn't screen out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And so that is no different, probably more amplified in a world where access was already low, and then COVID set that even further back.
Right. Were there any types of services that you saw being provided in higher volumes or lower volumes through the pandemic? And do you see a need to shift focus as we move out of the pandemic phase?
It's a great question. We were not live during the pandemic.
And so
it's hard for me to comment exactly on the range of services delivered before, through, and after.
Fair enough. I'm wondering how you see things at the street level, so to speak, in rural America. Are we coming out of the pandemic, or is this variable from state to state, county to county? Are we engaging in the same ways in different places around the country? What, if any, variation do you see?
My comment is probably not super insightful, more than that you know and have read, which is that the pandemic has become fairly politicized and politics vary depending on geography. And so a lot just depends on which geography you're in. I don't think rural America versus urban America is enough of a delineation to say kind of what has happened or what is happening, what are the rates, what are the actions, but it's much more local geography. Definitions and that have decided, or local geography fractions that have led to specific actions.
Could you speak a little bit about where you are on the journey in terms of development of the model, integration with local providers, footprint? Anything that you can share at this point would be interesting.
Sure. So we launched Homeward in March of 2022 with a formal launch, and we will be live seeing patients in July of 2022.
So to wrap things up, I'll ask you my final question, which is, if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what's one thing in healthcare that you would hope or maybe expect to find has changed drastically?
I hope that we're able to figure out a reimbursement model that allows for adequate service delivery and a personalization. My hope is that in doing that, we'll have aligned economic incentives, which today I think is one of the most broken pieces of healthcare.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, David. A real pleasure to be in conversation with you.
You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.